From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, a conversation with Mary Beth Rogers about how to turn Texas blue. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The last time that a Democrat won a statewide office in Texas was in 1994, over 20 years ago. No other state has seen Republican one-party rule longer. And there are few signs that that streak is going to be broken anytime soon. Judging from election returns, if anything, the Democrats appear to be going in reverse. The 2014 gubernatorial election that pitted Democrat State Senator Wendy Davis against Republican then Attorney General Greg Abbott was a meltdown for the Dems. Davis won just 39% of the vote. 4 years earlier, Bill White, the former mayor of Houston, ran as a Democrat for governor, and he won 42%. It's as if the Democrats who run for statewide office these days don't understand Texas politics and they don't understand Texas voters. Those are just two of the observations made in the new book, Turning Texas Blue: What Will It Take to Break the GOP Grip on America's Reddest State? It's written by Mary Beth Rogers. Rogers was there when Democrats won in Texas. She ran the successful Ann Richards for Governor campaign and served as her chief of staff for 2 years. In the book, Rogers takes a clear-eyed look at the mistakes of the Davis campaign and asks, what are the painful lessons that Democrats need to learn if they really want to win in Texas?
Well, I think that is a piercing question, and that's one that I wanted to try to answer when I sat down to write the book, because my frustration with the 2014 cycle really led me to a search to understand what was going on and why. And why did Democrats keep making the same old mistakes? And how did the Republican Party turn into the bastion of right-wing extremists that it has become today? So that's what set me off. And, of course, what I discovered, and I had an intuition that the Republicans have created this big red bubble over Texas, and it's protected them, but it's beginning to sprout a few leaks. And, in fact, a lot of what's happening internally in the Texas Republican Party is beginning to force those leaks, which will make the Republican Party of Texas vulnerable. Now, that's one side of the story. The other side of the story is that Democrats are wallowing in wishful thinking, and that's been going on for almost 20 years without realizing what's really happened in Texas, how the Republican Party really came to power, what's happening within it, and what's happening within their own Democratic Party, where their strengths are and where their weaknesses are and where their potential strengths are. So I see some opportunities arising. I see opportunities for Democrats. I see opportunities for Texas as a whole. If certain conditions continue and if certain opportunities are actually developed, I think that Democrats have a chance to break through. It's not going to be immediate and it's not going to be easy. But I wanted to write and a wake-up call for my fellow Democrats to begin to look at their world a little bit differently.
So you say there are leaks in the Republican dome over Texas. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think right now we're seeing a massive internal conflict within the state's Republican Party. When you look at the upcoming March primary vote, there are hotly contested races for state representative and for state senator. And what you've got is extreme right-wingers running against right-wingers. And the range of issues that they disagree on is more and more narrow. So you've got some internal competition that does not bode well for their future. But that internal conflict goes all the way up to the top. And what you're seeing within the Republican Party played out not so much in the media, but an undercurrent undercurrent of the competition between Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. There's a struggle going on for who's going to be the real leader of the Republican Party. There's speculation that Patrick might take on Abbott in his bid for re-election in 2018. And so what you've got going on now is each of these individuals trying to out-extreme the other. I think Governor Abbott's call for a constitutional convention is one example of that. It's, you know, for Republicans who say they value the Constitution and want to return to it and then propose something like a constitutional convention that could end up throwing the whole U.S. Constitution out and starting all over, that's a pretty extreme position that's really not been picked up as Abbott would like it. But it's an example of, you know, how far out can you get to appeal to the Republican primary voters who are extremely right and Tea Party oriented these days. So you've got that going on within the Republican Party. You've also got the other thing that's happening there, which few people seem to recognize, is that the Republicans may have reached their peak vote in Texas. They are about as high now as they can ever be. There's not much room to grow in the suburbs. There's little room to grow in the cities. Texas itself is changing, and the suburban demographics in Texas are changing as well. And that's been the source of Republican Party strength in Texas for the past 20 years. It will begin to diminish if Democrats learn how to take advantage of the demographic shifts that are occurring there.
That brings
up the leaks in the red bubble that I see.
And that brings up the second point that you had, that the Democrats, they've not been aggressive. They've been lazy. Maybe they felt entitled. They just have not had good candidates. Why is no one buying what they're selling?
Well, maybe what they're selling is not working. First of all, if you're selling the same old product with the same old communications mechanism and it fails time and time again, it's probably time to look for a new product and a new message and a new delivery system. And I think Democrats have been very slow in figuring out that that's one of the issues they have to deal with. Democrats are wallowing in wishful thinking that they're going to be rescued by the expanding Hispanic demographics in Texas. And it's not just going to happen. I mean, yes, the demographics of this state are changing, but it has to be worked. You can't just feel entitled to any segment of the vote. You've got to work for it. Recently, Democrats have rarely taken their campaigns out of the six major cities where the Democratic base vote is strongest. And there are opportunities now. There are opportunities outside of the big cities. You're seeing some changes in suburbs outside of Houston, outside of Dallas, outside of San Antonio. But as long as you don't begin to search for these new opportunities and begin to develop them, you're still going to be stuck in the same old patterns. And that's what I see happening. When you run the same old campaign and get the same old results, it's time to begin looking for something else.
The name of the book is Turning Texas Blue. And, of course, that's referencing to let's make Texas Democrat, you know, and stop becoming a Republican state, I guess. But
David, I'd be real happy if it just became a swing voter state. I'm not predicting miracles, but to put Texas back in play so that it is a swing voter state like Florida, where Democrats win sometimes, Republicans win sometimes. That's when you begin to have a balance. And that's when really good public policy can begin to emerge, when you've got this interplay of competing forces and one does not dominate the other. So, again, I would be real happy to have us be a swing voter state and not a totally Democratic state.
Sure, but that is a focus on party politics.
Right.
And when we talk to people who are not voters and what their concerns are, and we ask them, why don't you vote, It's that they don't like party politics. And getting the message to be more about how to fix your school or how to provide health care, is that synonymous with turning Texas blue?
Well, I think you've hit on a key point. Democrats and policymakers and the media could begin to connect policies with politics, and particularly on local levels. You've got major issues throughout Texas that could be developed and help people understand that if something is happening in their local community or in their region that they don't like, that it's usually tied to some sort of policy that's come out of the Texas legislature. And we're not doing that. Democrats have been unable to do that. The media is splintered and really doesn't often focus on that. But one of the issues I bring up in the book is an example of what happened in 2014 when the city of Denton had a ballot measure to prohibit hydraulic fracking within the city limits. Now, this is the process of injection into deep wells, water and chemicals to break up shale formations and allow natural gas and oil to come to the top. It's really a cleaner source of energy. But the side effects in terms of water pollution, air pollution, noise, all sorts of problems emerge from the fracking process. Fracking was occurring within the city limits, and there was a citizens group that put on the ballot this city ordinance to ban fracking within the city limits. They won the ordinance. They spent about $25,000 or $35,000. The oil company spent about $700,000, but still, the citizens of Denton spoke out on the issue. The day after the election, the state's Railroad Commission announced that they would not we're not going to honor the Denton vote, and the legislature in the 2015 session prohibited cities from enacting anti-fracking ordinances. Now, here's the disconnect. The city of Denton voted overwhelmingly for the Republican candidates for governor and for other state office, and these were people who were opposed to their stance on limiting fracking within the city limits. Nobody stopped to make the connection. That connection was not made during the 2014 election. That connection was not made afterward. And what I think where I think there are opportunities is to take issues like this with some sort of message mechanism or candidates who could run on these issues and say, if you want to solve this local problem, you have to look to Austin because the people in Austin are not paying attention to what your local needs are. You know, someone once asked Willie Nelson how he was able to write so many different kinds of songs, so many different kinds of tunes. And he said, you know, there are just thousands of melodies floating in the air, and you just have to pull one out and start singing it. Well, there are issues floating in the air in Texas that really matter to people, that matter whether they're white, black, or Hispanic. And they just need to be pulled out of the air and developed, and so that connection can be made between policy and politics. It is my hope and understanding that if that were to occur on a more regular basis, there could be some chance to begin to change some of these issues and thus change some of the politics involved.
You write in your book, Turning Texas Blue, that if you wanted an example, a campaign to look at to see all the things not to do, look at the Wendy Davis campaign for governor. So what went wrong there?
Well, just about every imaginable thing went wrong in that campaign. The campaign started with a number of erroneous assumptions, just automatically assuming that the campaign could galvanize a strong vote among women because of Wendy Davis' filibuster on abortion legislation during a legislative session. There was a lot of excitement, particularly in Austin. Well, that did not develop statewide. There were other erroneous assumptions, but there was a fundamental misunderstanding of the Texas electorate. There was a lack of a plan and a detailed strategy. There's a difference between a tactical campaign and a strategic campaign. And the Wendy Davis campaign, with the help of an outside group that came into Texas and adopted the name Battleground Texas, it was a purely tactical effort. The assumption being, if you just register lots of voters, new voters, they're going to come out and vote Democratic. And that was just not the case. There was a lack of understanding of the Texas electorate. I could go on and on and on. The campaign never was able to develop an overarching issue or theme that reached the majority of voters. It relied totally on a base voter turnout in the cities, which it had inadequate mechanisms to reach. It almost totally ignored 65% of the electorate, the people who actually vote in a non-presidential election year. 65% of those folks are Anglos. And there was no effort to reach people where they actually lived, what they cared about. And you can't run a base voter campaign and win in Texas. And that is the stark reality that I think the Davis campaign did not grapple with, and Democrats as a whole have not yet figured that out.
You talked just now about reaching out to white voters. And mm-hmm. has that kind of become the fracture line between Republicans and Democrats? Democrats are ignoring the white voters?
Well, I think to a large extent that's true. It's true nationally. I think there have been attempts in other states to reach out to working class white voters. In some areas it's worked, but on the whole, there's been little effort in Texas to do that. Not since Ann Richards won the governor's race in 1990 has a Democrat really reached into suburbs and Anglo communities on issues that mattered to them. And so you cannot ignore 65% of your electorate and expect to win statewide. So well, Democrats really have a big challenge. I think Wendy Davis pulled no more than 25% of the Anglo vote in Texas. If Democrats want to win statewide, they've got to raise that number to about 35%. Again, being realistic, and there are issues to do that. When I talked about connecting politics and policy, there are issues that are of concern to the majority of voters. I mean, you still have to deal with insurance rates. You still have to deal with quality public schools. And so those issues that to matter, they have to be framed in a way that reaches people and helps really define these issues as statewide issues and as local issues that have resonance with all voters, not just the base party vote.
But I've raised this with people who are in politics and who talk about it, and they react like, we shouldn't be talking about trying to reach out to white voters. We should just be going out to put out issues, and then people will respond. And to break it down that way, we need to target white voters and we need to get them to vote Democrat, which is, you know, what you're suggesting, then that is somehow disingenuous or hypocritical or cynical?
No, I think if you want to win, you need 50.1% of the vote to win. And so you look at how you put those numbers together. Now, when people say, you know, we shouldn't be doing that, that really hasn't worked out well for them recently. And so when things don't work out well for you, you need to look at other options. So one of my points in writing this book is don't get stuck in the same old way of doing things when it is not working. Yes, we have Democrats have a strong base vote in Texas and should. And there's room for expansion of the base vote, and that needs to happen. But you can't ignore what's going on in the rest of the state and expect to win. Texas Democrats have focused on, you know, the six big cities and the Rio Grande Valley and little else. You cannot win a statewide – a Democrat cannot win a statewide campaign if that is the overarching strategy.
You're listening to Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. I'm speaking with Mary Beth Rogers, author of Turning Texas Blue, What It Will Take to Break the GOP Grip on America's Reddest State. And Mary Beth, how important is Texas to national politics? If your dream came true and you're somehow be able to go from deep red to sort of a purplish, would that have impact nationally?
It would have a major impact nationally. And I think that's what's so disconcerting to realistic Republicans who are aware of the leaks in the big red bubble here. Texas has the second largest block of Electoral College votes. We've got 38 votes in the Electoral College. We're exceeded only by California that has 55 electoral votes. And as you know, the ultimate victory is decided in the Electoral College based on the votes of the states and the number of representatives they have. Texas is likely to pick up additional Electoral College votes after the 2020 census because our population is growing, and that will be reflected in additional congressional seats and thus the Electoral College. When Texas comes into play as a swing voter state in a national election, that changes the dynamics everywhere. Republicans will have to scramble to make up the loss of those 38 electoral votes, just as they did after California in the early 90s became a solid Democratic state with its 55 electoral votes. It first forced Republicans to branch out and to try to put together a combination of votes in other states to balance that out. If Texas were to switch, it changes the dynamics everywhere. So Republicans have a vested interest in looking at keeping Texas red. But also, Democrats may find, and we'll see what plays out in the 2016 presidential election, they may actually need those 38 votes in Texas in a way they have not needed them before. You know, maybe Democrats can't rely on Pennsylvania and Ohio and some of the other states they have relied on in the past few presidential elections. So at some point, I mean, people are hotshot political experts are aware of this. They just haven't quite figured out how to make the dynamic change yet. But it's certainly on the horizon.
So the great thing about your book, Turning Texas Blue, is that you do get around to laying out step-by-step things that the Democratic Party needs to do in Texas. And one of them is to spread the word about Republican extremism. And with governors that embrace Jade Helm and want to have a constitutional convention with amendments that would essentially nullify the Supreme Court and the executive branch, the presidency, it seems like they're doing that work for you.
Well, I think they are. I think there are opportunities to spread the word. Yes, they're doing that work. They're doing it themselves as they try to outdo each other in their extreme statements. You know, people just kind of shake their head and wonder what's going on. We're monitoring military operations. We're making outrageous statements about immigration, and I think you saw it with the Democrats when a party gets so self-confident and so complacent, they begin to embarge on actions that end up turning their own voters off, and I think that's beginning to happen.
Some people say that Texas is essentially, at its heart, a conservative state. So even when it was a Democratic state, it was a conservative Democratic state. And that's what we see now. That's why we have these elected officials, because they're conservative.
Well, I think there's a difference between true conservatism and extremism. And, yes, we've always been a center-right state, but we've had periods of real progressive legislation and policy in Texas. We had it in the 20s when you had women who had just received the vote leading the charge for free school books for Texas children, for compulsory public education for children, for child labor laws. You've always had a progressive strain in Texas history, going back to the origins of populism here in the 1870s and 1880s. We had a very progressive era of modern legislation in the late 1970s and 1980s in Texas. So that strain is there. It needs leadership. It needs development of new ideas. It needs to be in touch with the Texas electorate in a way that it is not now. But it's there. So, yes, while we may be overall a conservative state, you've always had a progressive glimmer here, and it's there now. It has to be developed.
When do you think, put a date on this, a goal without a deadline is just a dream. What is the deadline for turning Texas blue for you?
Well, you've got me here, because I hate to make predictions. I don't think it's going to happen in 2016, but I think by 2018, if certain conditions are ripe, you may see one or two breakthroughs. By 2020, I think there are real possibilities, and if you really want to get more reality-based, we're probably looking at 2022.
2020 would be the magic time because you would also hit during redistricting.
That's right.
You also say find the right leader. Do you have a particular leader that you think would be the one to break through, shatter the red dome over Texas?
I wish I could throw out a name for you, but I can't do that now. It is my hope that such a leader will emerge, somebody who is self-aware, self-assured, who has a vision, who can see a future of Texas and has the kind of the traditional Texas swagger, which our voters seem to like, whether in a Republican or a Democrat, and has that supreme self-confidence and ability to persuade people to come along with them on a new journey. And so that's the kind of leader I'm looking for.
But so when you say you don't have a name, is that you know people or you have some ideas, but you don't want to say them because that would be the kiss of death?
Well, it probably would be the kiss of death coming from me, but I do see leadership on a local level. I see leadership in the business community. I see people who genuinely care about what happens in public education in Texas, and who put their money in philanthropy and try to make some changes. There's a lot of good work going on in Texas among nonprofit groups. Many businesses are reaching out and supporting schools in unique ways. So there's more going on to help develop these opportunities than meets the eye. It's just that there's not been a single individual or a leader who's been able to galvanize that and focus that effort in a way that can break through the clutter.
Mary Beth Rogers is the author of Turning Texas Blue, What Will It Take to Break the GOP Grip on America's Reddest State? Rogers was there when Democrats won in Texas. She ran the successful Ann Richards for Governor campaign and served as her chief of staff for 2 years. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our website at tpr.org. That's where you'll find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.